Poppers any closer, all the joys is waking up at once, and then pop goes the weasel.
So you want us to proceed by jeep? The head of the army said.
Yes, the BFG said, but you must all be very, very hushy quiet. No roaring of motors, no shouting, no mucking about, no piggery-jokery.
The BFG, with Sophie still in his ear, trotted forward and the jeeps followed close behind. Suddenly, the most dreadful rumbling noise was heard by everyone. The head of the army went pea green in the face.
"Those are guns!" he cried. "There is a battle raging somewhere up ahead of us. Turn back, the lot of you. Let's get out of here."
"Pig spiffle," the BFG said. "Those noises is not guns."
"Of course they're guns," shouted the head of the army. "I am a military man, and I know a gun when I hear one. Turn back."
"Those is just the giants snortling in their sleep," the BFG said. "I is a giant myself, and I know a giant snortle when I is hearing one."
"Are you quite sure?"
the army man said anxiously.
"Positive,"
the BFG said.
"Proceed cautiously," the army man ordered. They all moved on.
Then they saw them. Even at a distance, they were enough to scare the daylights out of the soldiers. But when they got close and saw what the giants really looked like, they began to sweat with fear. 9 fearsome, ugly, half-naked, 50-feet-long brutes lay sprawled over the ground in various grotesque attitudes of sleep, and the sound of their snoring was indeed like gunfire in a battle. The BFG raised a hand. The jeeps all stopped. The soldiers got out.
"What happens if one of them wakes up?" whispered the head of the army, his knees knocking together from fear.
"If any one of them is waking up, he will gobble you down before you can say Nakjife," the BFG answered, grinning hugely. "Me is the only one what won't be gobbled up, because giants is never eating giants. Me and Sophie is the only safe ones, because I is hiding her if that happens."
The head of the army took several paces to the rear. So did the head of the Air Force. They climbed rather quickly back into their jeep, ready to make a fast getaway if necessary.
"Go forward, men," the head of the army said. "Go forward and do your duty bravely."
The soldiers crept forward with their ropes and chains. All of them were trembling mightily. None dared speak a word. The BFG, with Sophie now sitting on the palm of his hand, stood nearby watching the operation. To give the soldiers their due, they were extremely courageous. There were 6 well-trained, efficient men working on each giant, and within 10 minutes, 8 out of the 9 giants had been trussed up like chickens and were still snoring contentedly. The 9th, who happened to be the flesh lump eater, was causing trouble for the soldiers because he was lying with his right arm tucked underneath his enormous body. It was impossible to tie his wrists and arms together without first getting that arm out from underneath him. Very, very cautiously, the 6 soldiers who were working on the flesh lump eater began to pull at the huge arm, trying to release it. The flesh lump eater opened his tiny piggy black eyes.
"Which one of you foul pesters is wiggling my arm?" he bellowed. "Is that you, you rotsome man-hugger?"
Suddenly, he saw the soldiers. In a flash, he was sitting up. He looked around him. He saw more soldiers. With a roar, he leapt to his feet. The soldiers, petrified with fear, froze where they were. They had no weapons with them. The head of the army put his jeep into reverse.
"Human beings," the flesh lump eater yelled. "What is all you flush-bunking, rotsome, half-baked beans doing in our country?"
He made a grab at a soldier and swept him up in his hand.
"I is having early suppers today,"
he shouted, holding the poor, squirming soldier at arm's length and roaring with laughter. Sophie, standing on the palm of the BFG's hand, was watching horror-struck. "Do something," she cried. "Quick, before he eats him."
"Put that human being down," the BFG shouted. The flesh lump eater turned and stared at the BFG.
What is you doing here with all these grotty twiglets? He bellowed. You is making me very suspicious.
The BFG made a rush at the flesh lump eater, but the colossal 54-foot-high giant simply knocked him over with a flick of his free arm. At the same time, Sophie fell off the BFG's palm onto the ground. Her mind was racing. She must do something. She must. She must. She remembered the sapphire brooch the queen had pinned onto her chest. Quickly, she undid it.
I is guzzling you nice and slow,
the flesh lump eater was saying to the soldier in his hand.
Then I is guzzling 10 or 20 more of you midgy little maggots down there. You is not getting away from me, because I is galloping 50 times faster than you.
Sophie ran up behind the flesh lump eater. She was holding the brooch between her fingers. When she was right up close to the great naked hairy legs, she rammed the 3-inch-long pin of the brooch as hard as she could into the flesh lump eater's right ankle. It went deep inside the flesh and stayed there. The giant gave a roar of pain and jumped high in the air. He dropped the soldier and made a grab for his ankle. The BFG, knowing what a coward the flesh lump eater was, saw his chance.
You is bitten by a snake, he shouted. I seed it biting you.
It was a frightsome, poisonous viper. It was a dreadly, dangerous windscreen viper. Save our souls, bellowed the flesh lump eater. Sound the crumpets. I is bitten by a septicus venomous windscreen viper.
He flopped to the ground and sat there howling his head off and clutching his ankle with both hands. His fingers felt the brooch.
The teeth of the dreadly viper is still sticking into me, he yelled. I is feeling the teeth sticking into my ankle.
The BFG saw his second chance.
We must be getting those viper's teeth out at once, he cried. Otherwise, you is deader than duck soup. I is helping you.
The BFG knelt down beside the flesh lump eater.
You must grab your anklet very tight with both hands, he ordered. That will stop the poisonous juices from venomous viper going up your leg and into your heart.
The flesh lump eater grabbed his ankle with both hands.
Now close your eyes and gristle your teeth and look up to heaven and say your prayers while I is taking out the teeth of the venomous viper,
the BFG said. The terrified flesh lump eater did exactly as he was told. The BFG signaled for some rope. A soldier rushed it over to him. With both the flesh lump eater's hands gripping his ankle, it was a simple matter for the BFG to tie the ankles and hands together with a tight knot.
I is pulling out the frightsome viper's teeth, the BFG said, as he pulled the knot tight. Do it quickly, shouted the flesh lump eater. Before I is pizened to death.
There we is, said the BFG, standing up.
You can look now.
When the flesh lump eater saw that he was trussed up like a turkey, he gave a yell so loud that the heavens trembled. He rolled and he wriggled, he fought and he figgled, he squirmed and he squiggled. But there was not a thing he could do.
Well done you, Sophie cried.
Well done you, said the BFG, smiling down at the little girl. You is saving all of our lives.
Will you please get that brooch back for me? Sophie said. It belongs to the Queen.
The BFG pulled the beautiful brooch out of the flesh lump eater's ankle. The flesh lump eater howled. The BFG wiped the pin and handed it back to Sophie. Curiously, not one of the other 8 snoring giants had woken up during this schmozzle.
When you is only sleeping 1 or 2 hours a day, you is sleeping extra doubly deep, the BFG explained.
The head of the army and the Air Force drove forward once again in their jeep.
Her Majesty will be very pleased with me, the head of the army said. I shall probably get a medal. What's the next move?
Now you is all driving over to my cave to load up my bottles of dreams, the BFG said.
We can't waste time with that rubbish, the army general said.
It is the Queen's order, Sophie said. She was now back on the BFG's hand. So the 9 jeeps drove across to the BFG's cave, and the great dream-loading operation began. There were 50,000 jars in all to be loaded up, more than 5,000 to each jeep, and it took over an hour to finish the job. While the soldiers were loading the dreams, the BFG and Sophie disappeared over the mountains on a mysterious errand. When they came back, the BFG had a sack the size of a small house slung over his shoulder.
"What's that you've got in there?" the head of the army demanded to know. "Curiosity is killing the rat," the BFG said, and he turned away from the silly man.
When he was sure that all his precious dreams had been safely loaded onto the jeeps, the BFG said,
"Now he's driving back to the belly poppers and picking up the frightsome giants."
The jeeps drove back to the helicopters. The 50,000 dreams were carried carefully, jar by jar, onto the helicopters. The soldiers climbed back on board, but the BFG and Sophie stayed on the ground. Then they all returned to where the 9 giants were lying. It was a fine sight to see them. These great air machines hovering over the trussed-up giants. It was an even finer sight to see the giants being woken up by the terrific thundering of the engines overhead. And the finest sight of all was to observe those 9 hideous brutes squirming and twisting about on the ground like a mass of mighty snakes as they tried to free themselves from their ropes and chains.
"I is flesh-bunkled," roared the Fleshlump Eater.
"I is split-swiggled," yelled the Child Chewer.
"I is swog-swallowed," bellowed the Bone Cruncher. "I is goose-gruggled," howled the Man-Hugger.
"I is gunzel-swiped,"
shouted the Meat Dripper.
"I is flut-gungled," screamed the Maid Masher. "I is slop-gruggled,"
squawked the Gizzard Gulper.
"I is crud-squinkled," yowled the Blood Bottler.
"I is butt-muggered,"
screeched the Butcher Boy. The 9 giant-carrying helicopters each chose a separate giant and hovered directly over him. Very strong steel hawsers with hooks on the ends of them were lowered from the front and rear of each helicopter. The BFG quickly secured the hooks to the giant's chains, one hook near the legs and the other near the arms. Then, very slowly, the giants were winched up into the air, parallel with the ground. The giants roared and bellowed, but there was nothing they could do. The BFG, with Sophie once more resting comfortably in his ear, set off at a gallop for England. The helicopters all banked around and followed after him. It was an amazing spectacle, those 9 helicopters winging through the sky, each one with a trussed-up 50-foot-long giant slung underneath it. The giants themselves must have found it an interesting experience. They then stopped bellowing, but their howls were drowned by the noise of the engines. When it began to get dark, the helicopters switched on powerful searchlights and trained them onto the galloping giant so as to keep him in sight. They flew right through the night and arrived in England just as dawn was breaking. Feeding time. While the giants were being captured, a tremendous bustle and hustle was going on back home in England. Every earth digger and mechanical contrivance in the country had been mobilized to dig the colossal hole in which the 9 giants were to be permanently imprisoned. 10,000 men and 10,000 machines worked ceaselessly through the night under powerful arc lights, and the massive task was completed only just in time. The hole itself was about twice the size of a football field and 500 feet deep. The walls were perpendicular, and engineers had calculated that there was no way a giant could escape once he was put in. Even if all the 9 giants were to stand on each other's shoulders, the topmost giant would still be some 50 feet from the top of the hole. The 9 giant-carrying helicopters hovered over the massive pit. The giants, one by one, were lowered to the floor. But they were still trussed up, and now came the tricky business of releasing them from their bonds. Nobody wanted to go down and do this because, the moment a giant was freed, he would be sure to turn on the wretched person who had freed them and gobble him up. As usual, The BFG had the answer.
"I has told you before," he said. "Giants is never eating giants, so I is going down and I shall untie them myself before you can say Rag Jobinson."
With thousands of fascinated spectators, including the Queen, peering down into the pit, the BFG was lowered on a rope. One by one, he released the giants. They stood up, stretched their stiffened limbs, and started leaping about in fury.
"Why is they putting us down here in this grob-sludging hole?" they shouted at the BFG.
"Because you is guzzling human beans," the BFG answered. "I is always warning you not to do it, and you is never taking the titchiest bit of notice."
"In that case," the flesh lump eater bellowed, "I think we is guzzling you instead."
The BFG grabbed the dangling rope and was hoisted out of the pit just in time. The great bulging sack he had brought back with him from Giant Country lay at the top of the pit.
"What's in there?" the Queen asked him.
The BFG put an arm into the sack and pulled out a gigantic black and white striped object the size of a man.
"Snozcumbers!" he cried. "This is the repulsant Snozcumber, Magister. And that is all we is going to give these disgustive giants from now on."
"May I taste it?" the Queen asked.
"Oh, don't, Magister, don't," cried the BFG. "It is tasting of trog filth and pig scribble."
With that, he tossed the Snozcumber down to the giants below.
"There's your supper," he shouted. "Have a munch on that."
He fished out more Snozcumbers from the sack and threw them down. The giants below howled and cursed. The BFG laughed.
"It serves them right, left and centre," he said.
"What will we feed them on when the Snozcumbers are all used up?"
the Queen asked him.
"They is never being used up, Magister," the BFG answered, smiling. "I is also bringing in this sack a whole bungle of Snozcumber plants, which I is giving, with your permission, to the royal gardener to put in the soil. Then we is having an everlasting supply of this repulsant food to feed these thirst-bloody giants on."
"What a clever fellow you are," the Queen said. "You are not very well educated, but you are really nobody's fool."
"I can see that."
The author. Every country in the world that had in the past been visited by the foul man-eating giants sent telegrams of congratulations and thanks to the BFG and to Sophie. Kings and presidents and prime ministers and rulers of every kind showered the enormous giant and the little girl with compliments and thank yous, as well as all sorts of medals and presents. The ruler of India sent the BFG a magnificent elephant, the very thing he had been wishing for all his life. The king of Arabia sent them a camel each. The Lama of Tibet sent them a llama each. Wellington sent them 100 pairs of wellies each. Panama sent them beautiful hats. The king of Sweden sent them a barrel full of sweet and sour pork. Jersey sent them pullovers. There was no end to the gratitude of the world. The Queen herself gave orders that a special house with tremendous high ceilings and enormous doors should immediately be built in Windsor Great Park, next to her own castle, for the BFG to live in. And a pretty little cottage was put up next door for Sophie. The BFG's house was to have a special dream storing room with hundreds of shelves in it where he could put his beloved bottles. What is more, he was given the title of the Royal Dream Blower. He was allowed to go galloping off to any place in England on any night of the year to blow his splendid fizz whizzers in through the windows to sleeping children. And letters poured into his house by the million from children begging him to pay them a visit. Meanwhile, tourists from all over the globe came flocking to gaze down in wonder at the 9 horrendous man-eating giants in the great pit. They came especially at feeding time, when the Snozcumbers were being thrown down to them by the keeper, and it was a pleasure to listen to the howls and growls of horror coming up from the pit as the giants began to chew upon the filthiest-tasting vegetable on Earth. There was only one disaster. Three silly men who had drunk too much beer for lunch decided to climb over the high fence surrounding the pit, and of course, they fell in. There were yells of delight from the giants below, followed by the crunching of bones. The head keeper immediately put up a big notice on the fence saying, "It is forbidden to feed the giants." And after that, there were no more disasters. The BFG expressed a wish to learn how to speak properly, and Sophie herself, who loved him as she would a father, volunteered to give him lessons every day. She even taught him how to spell and to write sentences, and he turned out to be a splendid, intelligent pupil. In his spare time, he read books. He became a tremendous reader. He read all of Charles Dickens, whom he no longer called Dahl's Chickens, and all of Shakespeare, and literally thousands of other books. He also started to write essays about his own past life. When Sophie read some of them, she said, "These are very good. I think perhaps one day you could become a real writer."
"Oh, I would love that," cried the BFG. "Do you think I could?"
"I know you could," Sophie said. "Why don't you start by writing a book about you and me?"
"Very well," the BFG said. "I'll give it a try."
So he did. He worked very hard on it, and in the end he completed it. Rather shyly, he showed it to the Queen. The Queen read it aloud to her grandchildren. Then the Queen said,
"I think we ought to get this book printed properly and published, so that other children can read it."
This was arranged. But because the BFG was a very modest giant, he wouldn't put his own name on it. He used somebody else's name instead. But where, you might ask, is this book that the BFG wrote? It's right here. You've just finished it.
This audiobook was brought to you by Puffin Books, an imprint of Penguin Books Limited.
We hope that you've enjoyed this production of The BFG by Roald Dahl. This programme was executive produced by Patty Peruse. The BFG is a production of Penguin Audio, a member of Penguin Group USA, Inc. Copyright 2013. All rights reserved. The book, The BFG, is available wherever Puffin books are sold.
There's more to Roald Dahl than great stories. Did you know that 10% of author royalties from this book go to help the work of the Roald Dahl charities? Roald Dahl's marvellous children's charity exists to make life better for seriously ill children because it believes that every child has the right to a marvellous life. This marvellous charity helps thousands of children each year living with serious conditions of the blood and the brain, causes important to Roald Dahl in his lifetime, whether by providing nurses, equipment or toys for today's children in the UK, or helping tomorrow's children everywhere through pioneering research. Can you do something marvellous to help others? Find out how at www.roaldahlcharity.org. The Roald Dahl Museum and Story Centre, based in Great Missenden just outside London, is in the Buckinghamshire village where Roald Dahl lived and wrote, at the heart of the museum, created to inspire a love of reading and writing, is his unique archive of letters and manuscripts. As well as two fun-packed biographical galleries, the museum boasts an interactive story centre and is now the home of his famous writing hut. It is a place for the family and teachers and their pupils to explore the exciting world of creativity and literacy. Find out more at www.roaldahlmuseum.org.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.